guys need to be challenged, and not in a terrible, like, you're a terrible person way, in a way where they can understand where they're coming from, they can be accepted in that group, but also to say, you can do better.
That's Herman Villegas, the host of the podcast Modern Manhood.
We're back to talking about men's groups yet again, and this time we're going to talk about the potential problems on this edition of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. We're your hosts. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And I'm Jonathan Freeman, and on this 50th episode of The Gender Knot, we're going to hear about the potential problems of men's groups.
Guys need to have, like, open conversations with each other. I think that we really, really need to do that. But we also can't just stop going to therapy. Like, I think we can't just not go to therapy. I think it's there for a reason. We've done it. It works.
I'm going to quickly give you a rundown of this show in case you're new. This is the podcast where we take a dilemma around gender and we delve in. We try to untangle it a little bit and see if we can even figure it out. So I'm Naz. I'm a journalist based in London. My co-host Jonathan is in DC. Jonathan, are you convinced to join a men's group?
Well, as you know, our co-producer, Johnny Blackwell, he is the big promoter of men's groups on the podcast. And I'm still waiting for him to give me a hard sell.
So we looked at men's groups recently. Johnny actually went to some and interviewed some people. We've got a lot of feedback about them. So we're going to delve back in, and we're also going to speak to Herman Villegas. He hosts the Modern Manhood podcast, and he also actually runs men's groups as well. And he has identified some potential problems. So he got in touch. We're going to hear from him in a bit. First, let's get a little bit of housekeeping out of the way. First up, we have Gender Knot t-shirts. They're made by the great people at TeePublic, who make these really fantastic on-demand t-shirts. Check out their store. They've got lots of great stuff. Check out our t-shirts if you want to support the podcast and keep us going. Buy a t-shirt.
And leave us a review. They're really important for other people to hear about the podcast. iTunes, Google Play, wherever you are getting your podcasts, leave a review, write us back. We also love hearing from you. So you can write to us on our website or, of course, thegenderknot@gmail.com.
We love getting your emails. We do read and respond to everything, but we're all a little bit behind. So do be patient and bear with us. Also, I wanted to do a little bit of a cheeky shout out to something I did recently. I recently hosted a BBC documentary on female friendships, looking at why technology has been such a mixed blessing for female friendships. So we spoke to the Vanity Fair journalist Nancy Jo Sales. She's done a lot of stuff about teenage girls and technology. Also the anthropologist Robin Dunbar and a host of others. We've linked to it in the show notes. If you're into the Gender Knot, you might dig that as well. Next week, we're going to look at how women can negotiate for better pay. Sam Baker, our other co-producer, she and I are interviewing some women about that, and we're going to talk about that. I feel like it will be a de facto women's group, seeing as we've talked about men's groups so much so far.
So we're saying that men are needing to deal with emotions and women are needing to deal with pay negotiation?
We're going to get together and just chat about money and how to get more of it. So I feel like it's a bit of a role reversal.
Well, there you go.
So 2 weeks ago, we looked at men's groups. Johnny Blackwell went to some, and we wanted to see if they can provide men with the support they need. We have had a lot of feedback from you about this. Some people really in support of men's groups and who've had great experiences, some people less so. And like I said, we're going to speak to Herman in a second.
Yeah, so, and we got a voicemail about this.
Hi, this is Michael from Kansas City, Missouri. I wanted to share my own experiences with men in support groups. I used to go to a group for men who were survivors of sexual assault. I was working through my own experiences with childhood abuse and sexual assault in my 20s, and it was really the first time that I'd been around other men actually sharing what they felt, and other men who were openly experiencing emotion, especially around other guys. It was really kind of a surreal experience for me. I remember the first time I came home from the group, and I just felt emotionally empowered, really for the first time in my life. So much of my life, up till recently, has been a game of suppressing what I was feeling, and it really only just led me into a deeper depression and self-hatred. Being around other men who had fought or fighting those battles and were now open about their feelings just felt incredibly liberating to me. I was okay, I was no longer alone, and that weight that I'd been carrying just became a little bit lighter.
We also got an email from Tony from Ohio. By the way, if you email us or send us voicemails and we want to use them on the show, we will ask you if that's okay beforehand. So Tony from Ohio said the following. He said, I would never join a men's group. I grew up with only brothers. I went to an all-boys Jesuit school. I have had enough of the typically male viewpoint. I don't exist in the typically male environment. I abhor it, actually. I don't understand why I would go to a place to learn about feelings and communication and such from other people, myself included, who are stunted in their development in this area. I have found that my friendships with women have been a better learning ground for me. I have great male friends. I have even better female friends. The all-male atmosphere for me makes me intensely uncomfortable. I prefer mixed atmospheres of a spectrum of approaches and viewpoints at all times. But that's just my experience and does not mean to say that these groups might not be helpful for others. I just don't like packs of men.
Interesting, you know, what Tony's saying, and also in conjunction with next week's episode. A friend of mine recently came and we had coffee, and she was talking about how she wants to start an all-female firm, and she was asking me if I knew any women that might be interested. And I ended up sending her a list of like 40 women that I knew that would be great for what she's doing, which I think speaks more to the fact that I have a whole lot of really awesome women in my life. So thank you, awesome women. But I mean, I get what Tony's saying.
Yeah, well, it is interesting because I've often thought as well, if a certain group struggles with something, then can they really give each other support? But then I guess like what Michael was saying in his voicemail, it's kind of knowing that other people have had your experience and feeling less alone. I mean, that in itself can be very powerful as well. So I guess there's kind of two sides to that.
Sure.
We also got an email from Herman Vijegas. He's the host of the fantastic podcast Modern Manhood. You should check it out and subscribe to it, especially if you're into the gender knot. You will most probably be into that too. So we're going to speak to him in just a minute. And actually, we've been in touch with him for a while and we've been wanting to do something with him. So it's interesting that he sent us an email after that men's group episode. He had some concerns about men's groups in general. Now, he is a teacher and an educator. He's based in Edmonton in Canada, and he works with teenagers on mental health and healthy relationships. He also works with Next Gen Men. That's a non-profit in Canada which promotes healthy masculinity. They run youth groups and community workshops. Now, on top of all of that, Herman also runs men's groups, and he usually has a therapist or other mental health professional with him when he runs the groups. And we'll hear more about that later. So he's someone who's really stuck in the trenches dealing with a lot of the topics that we talk about on this podcast, but he's kind of, yeah, really stuck in on the front line. So in his email, he said some of the following. He said, I personally have some real concerns with what was being said by these guys running the men's groups. And that man up guy, he's talking to about one of the guests, which I think runs deep into my problems with most men's groups. In my experience in the social work, social justice sector, I have seen and witnessed many of these groups pop up, usually put up by well-meaning guys wanting to have feelings discussions with other guys. The problem that I have is that most of these groups are not run by therapists or certified group counselors. He goes on to say, second of all, that man up dude, woo, where to begin? How do you push a four-year-old and go beyond his limits? That's bordering on abuse, especially in a time of a young man's life where trauma and toxic stress can be the most damaging. And also his advice that we care too much about feelings is bunk and comes from nothing. It's quite obvious that men want to talk about their feelings and that the socialization of traditional Western masculinity has allowed men to repress their emotional awareness. It really seems to me that he's scared of releasing his hold on the old dominance of his own masculinity. And then Herman says, at Next Gen Men, we're doing our version of men's groups, but it's more of a community conversation that invites like-minded men to come by and talk about specific subjects that affect men, like isolation. Our first part of the night is a rule to say that this is not a support group and this is not a substitution for therapy. I had a chat with Herman to find out more about the potential problems of men's groups. Basically, let's just start with a big question.
Sure.
What are the potential problems of men's groups? Because on the Gender Knot, we've been hearing about how great they are, but you have a lot more on the ground experience with them, and you had some concerns.
Yeah, I think my major concerns with men's groups specifically is who is doing the men's groups,
right?
Or who are the facilitators of the men's groups. I think there's a lot of guys that are very interested in doing this type of work and helping other guys, which is great, like an overall great thing. It's just that I worry because it's such a, I would say such a like heavy, heavy work, and it takes a lot of technical expertise and experience. And I just wouldn't hand that off to anybody. I think a lot of the guys who do, and I would say most of the guys who do the men's groups are so-called, you know, coaches. They're either life coach, entrepreneur coaches, and stuff like that. I think I would want a real therapist to do a men's group.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things that come out of men's groups that sometimes can be hard to deal with, and you really need a finessed hand to make sure everybody's good and make sure what you're doing is research-based and also, like, ethical, I would say.
Mm-hmm. When you say ethical, what do you mean? Like, are there examples of things that happen in men's groups which you think are well-meaning but can kind of backfire and be harmful?
Yeah, I say maybe the challenges of maybe being a little bit more trauma-informed, for instance, or I notice sometimes in men's groups that something comes out that I'm just going to give a hypothetical, for instance. Like, someone would say something that was very either misogynistic or sexist or racist or whatever it would be. And that would be allowed in that group for some reason. And they would be able to kind of honor that. And that to me is a problem. I think that person needs to be challenged in a certain way. But that's the thing. It takes kind of a finesse hand to be challenged through that idea, is because once you kind of break down where that comes from, you see a little more and more of that person. So, for example, if you hear somebody say, you know, I think all women are terrible and they're cheats and liars, and then you kind of get to the story and you find out that, you know, their mom was a cheat or a liar, or their ex-wife was a cheat or a liar. And if you replace the word woman with mom and you replace the word woman with my ex-wife,
yeah,
then that story becomes a little bit different. Then it's like, my mom was a liar, my mom was a cheat.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then you process that a little bit different than to say all women are liars and all women are cheat. And I that's the thing. I really have issues with people who are the facilitators who are doing these type of work. I think they really need to have a challenging but also finessed hand, and also like a little bit more strength-based approach, or maybe more a trauma-based approach to this work. I don't think anybody can just jump in and do it.
So two things have come up. First of all, I'm thinking, while I agree with what you're saying, isn't part of the point that it's like a safe space where you might be able to explore things that are taboo or things that you feel like you can't say anywhere else?
Yeah, and I think it should be a safe space, but I think a safe space needs to be... I also have issues sometimes when people say in safe spaces, because safe space is a very therapeutical model. And once you create a safe space, then yes, everybody can just like be able to say in a very safe way. But if you're doing a group, and for instance, there was a person that said, you know, I think, you know, gay people are the worst, and there's a gay person right beside you in that group, like, how are you going to approach that?
Yeah.
Are you going to allow for that statement to happen, or are you going to like be able to process that a little bit further? I think a safe space needs to be done by professionals. Like, and that's why when I work with men's groups in a more of a community-based model, I use the term brave space, because I want them to be challenged. I want them to be not only, you're going to be able to be listened to, but you're also going to be working on listening.
Yeah.
Like, you're not only going to be given empathy, you're also going to be using empathy towards this. So I think that part is important too.
So that's interesting. You said brave space, because the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, a moment ago you talked about, you used the words finesse and strength in the same sentence when discussing, I think it was, what a facilitator needs to do. And I find that quite interesting, because, I don't know, finesse and strength. Not that they're mutually exclusive, because they totally aren't. But it sounds like you're saying the facilitator has quite a sort of specialized and quite a difficult role in a way.
It definitely do. They definitely do. Like, I co-facilitate, and I have a PhD candidate counselor who has a master's degree and who has done a lot of classes and read a lot of research and theory on specific therapeutical group work. So I co-facilitate with him and I learn a lot from him. And so I was in a group with him. It was a drop-in men's group that we do. And there was a young boy, not a young boy, I would say a father and a son. The boy was about 20 years old. The son was about 50. I mean, the father was about 50. They got into an argument. And because they were there to learn about each other, to learn to communicate for each other, that was their words, to communicate with each other. But they got into a really very interesting but also very heated argument about how they see each other. And if it wasn't for having a skilled hand like the person I had beside me, I don't know what would have come out of that. I was very concerned about the makeup of the group and how we were going to, is this part of the process? Is it, if we call it a safe space, do we allow this? Like, so I leaned a lot on him to say, okay, well, this is how we're going to approach this. This is definitely part of the process. This argument is, but how is the group going to approach this too? And how is the group going to actually take this in? And how do we actually check in after the fact that there is, that the group is cool with this? Because if the group is not cool with this, then this is a problem. But also, like, it also takes finesse for those two people to come out of it in a way that we felt that there's some sort of therapy involved in this too. When I say strength and finesse, like, I always kind of go back to like the term about vulnerability, and I say vulnerability is strength, because it takes a little bit to be vulnerable. It's an awkward situation to be in that, and it takes a strength to say, no, I'm going to step back.
Yeah.
I'm going to might let this happen for a bit, and then I'm going to use the right way to try to be able to pull this back in a way that's useful, instead of just letting this be. And that takes a skilled hand to do that. And I'm still learning about it, but I wouldn't say I'm, like, I've done this for years and years and years, and I still don't say I would be. I'm definitely good at it. So I don't know.
But Herman, with this example with the father and son, I mean, like, I don't know the details of what their argument was about, but were you concerned that they might not be safe with each other? And I don't just mean like physically safe, but emotionally safe with each other after the session, that it had opened up too much? Because this also happens, as someone who sees a therapist, this also happens sometimes when if you've got too much gap between seeing someone and you're in quite an emotionally vulnerable state. I mean, totally. Was that your concern?
Yeah, that was definitely my concern, was their emotional states. And like, I was, because it is only like, was only like an hour and a half session that we had. And after that hour and a half, like, I wanted to make sure that they were emotionally well, like, because that takes a lot of skill to be able to come out of it for them. I'm talking for the father and the son, for them to come out of their argument and say, you know what, I learned something from this, instead of just holding a grudge or letting this carry on or carry this on for another week or so. It's tough to do that, and we tried our best, and they came back next week and we talked about it. So that was, it was great. But at the same time, like, I worry about those situations, because that could have gone off the rails very quickly. And I feel like a person who is, you know, quote unquote coach or whatever, like, they might have the skill to do that, but I don't know that for sure. I don't know if they do or not. Like, and I would trust my coworker, because I know that he has a skill to do that, because he has, you know, like, he seems a little bit classist.
but it is what it is. So in a way,
he has the paperwork for it. Like, I truly believe that there needs to be some sort of therapy behind it. And I also worry about when those men's groups are, especially the mythopoetic men's group, talking about, you know, the feminine and the masculine and whatnot. I don't know where that comes from sometimes. And I'm also saying, like, that's very spiritual. I like that. I don't mind spirituality, but it also needs to be with, if these guys are going through some stuff, they needs to be, you know, like bounded with therapy or bounded with something else. Like, they can't just be that.
Yeah.
And it can't just be the substitute for therapy. And that's what I'm finding, like, the thing with men's group is that the guys go to these men's groups and they make it the substitute for therapy. And I say to them, you need to go to therapy. Even if it's once every 6 months, just make that a habit, because it needs to be coupled with it. I don't see that happening. I don't see those guys being saying, guys, if you do this, it's not everything. You got to do this and do these other things too.
Yeah. Well, a few things come up for me. First of all, it's interesting because you're talking about therapy. I see a therapist, and like, most therapists have to spend years studying, right? So it's kind of like a really deep, intense process. But at the same time, one of the problems is, and you all know about this better than I do, but that men are very resistant to seeing therapists.
Yes, for sure.
But do you think men's groups can be a good gateway, or like, they can sort of open some men up to the point where then they will be open to potentially seeing a therapist? Or do you think that just doesn't happen? They just kind of are like, oh, I'll do this instead.
That's okay. That's my worry.
Right.
I do. That's, I love men's groups in that sense. I think guys need to be have spaces or need to be invited to have conversations about themselves and about other about things that are going on in their lives, because it, you know, guys have not been socialized to talk about those things, to talk about their emotions, to talk about their own mental health. And I attribute to, you know, the high rates of suicide and the high rates of addiction that guys go through to for that, that they don't have that space to do that. And I'm very proud to work for an organization that try to foster that space as well, that foster that conversation. At the same time, you know, in our organization, we do say that is our first thing that we say for our groups is to say, this is not a substitute for therapy. If you need some help with what's going on in your life and you need some counseling, we know where to go. We know where to send you. Please let us know. Hopefully those men's groups opens the door for that kind of conversation, because it is a very vulnerable conversation for another guy to come up to another guy and say, you know what, I need some help. And I think that's what I want from these men's groups, is for them to open up with themselves so they can ask for help when it's needed. And when that person asks for help, they know where to go. My worry is that these men's groups feel like ego-driven sometimes, that some of these guys are not...
The guys who run them.
Yeah, the guys who run them are not able to kind of pass that off and to say, you know, please go help, please go do this. Like, I don't know if they are trained in looking out for suicide warnings. I don't know if they're trained in looking out for, you know, child abuse. And, you know, that's something that, that we are trained as facilitators. I know I'm trained in that. I get trained in that every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely something that we still look out for every time when we hear these kind of conversations. I don't know if these guys are. I don't know if these facilitators are. And that's the thing that worries me. And I think that may be kind of a masculinity thing. It's kind of a toxic masculinity thing, this ego-driven kind of culture.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the communities need to really like help each other. So I'm not knocking men's groups in total. I think guys need to have like open conversations with each other. I think that we really, really need to do that. But we also can't just stop going to therapy. Like, I think we can't just not go to therapy. I think it's there for a reason. We've done it. It works. And you know what? When I'm at work and we have these counselors, and I always ask what the statistics of like how many guys to how many women come to our work. And it's usually like 70% women and 30% guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys that come in, and one of my coworkers, he works with a lot of the guys, and most of them get like dragged in by their partner or get dragged in by their significant other. I'm like, why, if these guys parts of men's group, your friend should be able to do that. Your friend should be able to say, hey, let's go together. Let's go do this together. And, you know, I'll help you come to these things. And to their credit, I do see some guys do that, but it's not most of them. I that's a very special thing when that happens.
but something I've wondered, because and Johnny and I raised this in the episode, was that, like, personally for me, the thought of talking about intimate stuff in front of a big group is really weird, whereas in front of one person, I find that kind of very comfortable. But I wonder, is this the opposite for a lot of people, maybe even a lot of guys? Because sometimes if you're in a group, I don't mean this in a judgy way, this is just an observation. Sometimes in a group you can hide a little bit, and is that more comfortable, do you think, for some of these men? Like, they might feel more comfortable saying something small in a group, letting someone else take over, whereas being with one person for 50 minutes is quite an intense experience. I don't know, maybe, do you think maybe the men's group experience can help build some of these men up towards sort of eventually sitting one-on-one with like a really trained professional?
Yeah, I would hope so. Like, I think that should be one of the main goals of having a men's group, specifically like a community conversation types of men's groups, where guys are able to not only open up, but also see other guys open up. And I think because of our social stigma that we face, where we don't have those models of guys opening up in a way that they're not mocked to be opened up, you know, like, or they have these conversations about sports and it just becomes this very shallow conversation, and they think, oh, that's opening up. That it's not really. I think guys really need to see those models. And so maybe going into a group and staying silent or just watching what's going on, maybe that does help. But also at the same time, again, they need to be challenged. They need to say, you know, what's going on in your life, or what's what's up with what's, why did you want to come to this group in general? And I think those questions are also quite important. And also, they also need to know that once they open up, that they're not going to be mocked or ridiculed for it. Mm-hmm. So that's also a challenge in itself. And that's, I think those are the main purposes of these kind of groups. It is sort of like therapy, but it's not like, but at the same time, when something big comes out from them, they need to have a model to say, well, you need to ask for help, or you need to find out a professional to go to. Guys, for the most part, and when I'm talking about traditional Western dominant masculinity, is that we haven't had the models of how to do that. And so I think these men's groups serve that purposes. You know, our fathers and our grandfathers did not give us that specific model to ask for help. And I know I'm not speaking for all of them. I mean, there's a lot of great fathers out there. My dad's great like that too. But at the same time, this code that we've had from before hasn't worked, and we know that it doesn't work. So now we're trying something new, and we're trying to fill in this gap of this social conversation that we have with each other. But I think that's the purpose of men's groups. But they need to go a little bit further, and I don't think a lot of the facilitators are prepared for that. That's my honest opinion.
So basically what I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, is it that maybe even just by attending and sort of mostly passively sitting there and not being challenged, guys aren't actually getting to the root of the problem, but they think they're doing something?
Yo, totally. Totally. Correct. Like, I always say that when you're trying out empathy, for instance, it's a skill. Like, you have to work on it. It is going to the gym. You can't just go to the gym, not lift a weight, and say, oh, no, I went to the gym. I did good today. You have to go there and actually try on some weights and actually lift something. Mm. So to work on empathy, you have to do it. And so to get empathy, you actually still need to give empathy. Mm-hmm. You can't just take up all the space in the group. And also, you can't just sit there passively. You have mm-hmm. to actually work on it. And when I say that finesse and strength, like, it takes a little bit of a skilled hand to challenge somebody in an empathetic way, mm-hmm. to call them in instead of calling them out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's super important. And it's so hard to do. I'm still learning how to do it. and I've been doing this for a long time now. So it's not something that can just come easily. And I'm worried that these guys are being either doing passively or just given the space to say and not be challenged. Mm-hmm. And guys need to be challenged, and not in a terrible, like, you're a terrible person way, in a way where they can understand where they're coming from. They can be accepted in that group, but also to say you can do better. And that's important too.
You heard from Herman Vijegas on this episode of The Gender Knot.
It was hosted by me. I'm Naz Trantavakolifar, or Naz in short.
And I'm Jonathan Freeman. Our co-producers are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell.
We'll be back next week.
Talk to you later.